May it please the court, this is a non-competition government case. The petitioner was immediately enjoined when suit was filed. He was temporarily enjoined after a hearing, and final trial was to a jury. The jury failed to find irreparable injury. The trial court disregarded that failure to find and granted permanent injunction. Permanent injunction was affirmed by the Court of Appeals. The primary basis of the Court of Appeals decision rested on application of Florida law. The covenant not to compete in this case contains a recitation that Florida law is to govern its effect. The petitioner's contention is that Florida law is absolutely repugnant to the public policy of the state of Texas in connection with these non-competition agreements, and should be given no effect at all in this case, and certainly should not be given, Texas courts should not give effect to a procedural presumption under Florida law when sitting in equity considering injunctive relief. The Florida presumption is of irreparable injury. The initial issue before this court is the error in considering Florida law for any purpose at all in this case. The Court of Appeals, in its opinion, clearly notes Florida state authority for the proposition that the only thing the Florida courts can consider are the time and territorial reasonableness of the covenant. Specifically, the Court of Appeals in our case notes that the Florida courts cannot consider the oppressive effect on an employee, that the Florida courts cannot consider whether or not the covenant is reasonably necessary to protect the legitimate interests of the employer. These issues simply cannot be raised in Florida. That notion of justice is repugnant to this court's decision in Hill versus Mobile Auto on these and other points. In Hill versus Mobile, this court held that there must be clear and convincing evidence that a non-competition covenant is reasonably necessary to protect the employer. There must be clear and convincing evidence that the non-competition covenant is not unduly oppressive on the former employee. There must be evidence that the covenant, that enforcement of the covenant is not injurious to the public. And finally, there must be evidence that the covenant is supported by consideration. Each of these four criteria carry no weight at all under Florida law. Florida courts would say, so what, on each of these points? If the time and territorial restraint is reasonable, Florida courts enforce the covenant, and Florida courts cannot look beyond the time and territorial restraint. For that reason, this covenant is not to be governed by Florida law in Texas litigation.
Well, let me interrupt you there, Mr. Mercer. Since the contract agrees that Florida law will control, at what point are we entitled to disregard Florida law?
At the outset.
For what reason?
Because it's contrary to the Texas public policy.
So any time we consider a foreign law to be contrary to our public policy, we have the right to disregard it even though the party's contracted?
Absolutely. Just as with gambling contracts.
Well, but we enforce gambling contracts that are entered into in Nevada, don't we?
This contract was not entered into in Florida. This contract was signed, it was sent to DeSantis in Texas, was signed in Texas, and sent back to Wackenhut in Florida. This contract relates solely to activity in Texas.
But can't the parties contract as to what law is going to be applicable?
Yes, sir, they can.
Didn't they do that in this
case? Yes, sir, they did.
And why is it offensive? You say it's against public policy, that's the reason we should disregard it?
Yes, sir. That's the first reason we should disregard it. That's the second reason. The second reason is that this contract does not bear a sufficient relationship with the state of Florida to give effect to Florida law. This contract relates solely to employment and use in Texas, purports to restrict activity in Houston, Texas, solely in Houston, Texas, has nothing to do with the state of Florida. The state of Florida has no interest in seeing its law enforced in this contract. The litigation is in the state of Texas. It seeks injunctive relief, which invokes the equity power of a Texas court. And the injunction is related solely to Texas.
Performable only in the 40 Texas counties, right?
Yes.
What, do you have any case, are you just saying it's Harnbook law, that when the law of foreign jurisdiction is against the public policy of this state, we're entitled to disregard it?
I think we set out stories for that in our application.
You remember a case offhand?
No, I don't. I'm thinking K&S Land Company comes to mind. I don't know whether that's correct or not. Let me also call the court's attention to the amicus brief filed in this case by Mr. Fenton with the Gardier and Wynn Law Firm out of Dallas. The amicus brief goes into the Florida law versus Texas law issue in a good deal more depth than does our application in this case.
Mr. Mercer, what do you contend to be the, well, let's say minimum contact, for lack of a better term, that must exist between the subject matter of this contract and the law of Florida in order for us to be able to ignore Florida law?
I think it has to be viewed on a case-by-case analysis.
Well, can you give us some of the elements? That must be, is it the same as minimum contact for long-arm jurisdiction?
No, I don't think it is. It's a determination under Texas conflict of laws rule, and I think the words are sufficient contact. Sufficient contact to invoke or to look to the law of foreign jurisdiction. In this case, the subject matter of the contract bears no relevance to Florida at all. Now, it is true that Wackenhut's headquarters is in Florida. It is true that Wackenhut generally supervises with its international organization on its Florida headquarters. But that has absolutely nothing to do with the injunctive relief sought under this covenant in this case. This covenant is restricted solely to the 40 counties around Houston. And in my judgment, that is not a sufficient relationship with the state of Florida for this court or for the Texas courts to look to Florida law.
Well, do you want us to apply Texas law to the contract, or do you want us to say that the covenant is void?
I want both. I think this court should apply Texas law to this contract. This contract is seeking to be enforced. The respondents seek to enforce this contract in Texas court. And I think this court should apply Texas law and declare this contract void, this covenant void, because it is offensive to Texas law. Another point that should be noted, this contract does not satisfy even Florida's statute. Florida requires time and territorial reasonableness, as does Texas, before Texas gets to the other point outlined in here. This contract covers 40 counties. Trial court, in the final judgment, made the express finding that it was geographically unreasonable and reduced the covenant to, I believe, 13 counties. Now, that finding by itself is a finding that this covenant was unreasonable. I respectfully suggest that it is unreasonable for a whole lot more reasons, but that finding by itself makes this covenant unreasonable under the Florida statute. In considering the covenant under the Texas statute, I would respectfully suggest that it fails every test of Hill versus Mobile. At issue in this case were two clients. This is a security guard business. Samus was the manager of the Houston office for Wackenhut. He was discharged. 6 months later, he entered into contract with two former clients of Wackenhut, Marathon Oil Company, TRW Mission Manufacturing Company.
It's technical, but was he discharged or did he quit in anticipation of discharge?
Three executives flew in from Florida, told him he could resign or expire on the spot. It happened in one meeting. And he signed the paper saying he resigned. The evidence is clear that he would have been fired had he not. The main issue that we tried in the trial of this lawsuit was why did Marathon and TRW leave Wackenhut. We brought in the witnesses from Marathon, the security people at Marathon. We brought in the security people at TRW. We brought in security people from other organizations that Wackenhut had alleged the Santas was soliciting. Without exception, every one of these non-party witnesses testified clearly, no, DeSantis did not solicit our business. With respect to Marathon and TRW, these witnesses spent hours in court on the stand going through their litany of complaints with Wacky Hut Service after DeSantis left. These are the non-party witnesses from Marathon and from TRW setting out complaint after complaint after complaint over the deterioration in service being provided by Wacky Hut. They testified after 5 or 6 months, 5 months of this, we decided we'd had enough, we'd made enough requests for the thing to be corrected. They were not corrected. We decided we were not going to have any more dealing with Wacky Hut. We then asked DeSantis to submit a bid to us. There is no evidence at all that DeSantis solicited any clients, and the evidence is to the contrary that he did not.
Mr. Mercer, assuming we agree with you 100%, since the permanent injunction expired almost 2 years ago on March 29, 1986, why isn't this moot?
Because DeSantis has filed a counterclaim. He's contended from the start that the activities, the prosecution of this litigation against him has been wrong. He's filed a counterclaim for his damages. He's entitled to damages that he incurred while temporarily enjoined and further while permanently enjoined. There was a jury finding of some damages which the trial court disregarded. He's entitled to his damages under the Free Enterprise Act. He's entitled to his damages under the common law. He's entitled to his damages under Rule 684. And that's the purpose of this.
Are you saying you had adequate issues to adequate findings to support recovery of damages so that we could render a judgment if we agreed with you?
Sure. We're challenging the amount of the damages as being inadequate, but there is a finding of damages that the company suffered as a result of the seem to word it as a result of the injunction or as a result of the loss of the two contracts, which the evidence showed resulted from the injunction.
Surely we have no jurisdiction over inadequacy.
No, I agree. That was challenged at the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals never reached those points. But as far as the question on could you render, yes. I suppose if the court saw fit, it could render, it could declare the covenant void, therefore it necessarily follows that the injunction was wrong, it shouldn't have been enjoined, therefore it necessarily follows that he's entitled to recover the damages that the jury did find. Now,
wouldn't it best we have to remand it back to the Court of Appeals to write on your points of error that they didn't write on?
I suspect that probably is the result if this court agrees that the covenant is void. Should this court reach that position, I would ask that the court address another question that we've urged from the trial court forward, and that is under the Texas Antitrust Act. In 1983, the legislature amended the former antitrust laws and enacted what's called the Texas Free Enterprise and Antitrust Act. In that enactment, the legislature did two very, very significant things. It included services in activities that are proscribed under the antitrust statute. Now, prior to that enactment, the antitrust laws covered only tangible personal property. Historically, in the early years, litigants challenged these non-competition covenants under the statute. And the courts, in the late 1800s or early 1900s, this court ruled no, this statute covers only tangible personal property. Well, since 1983, that's no longer the case. So I would suggest that these covenants can be challenged under this statute, because the only reason they couldn't be challenged has been changed to include services. The second significant thing that the 83 legislature did was to include treble damages for one victimized by a contract violating the statute. This is a case of first impression. As far as I know, there's been no, I don't believe any case has challenged the non-competition covenant under the 83 statute. And so far as I know, there's been no court address the issue of the treble damage provision remedy under that statute. If this court sees fit to declare this covenant unreasonable, I would, and feel that the case must be remanded, I would request that the court at least comment on the availability of remedies to be considered on remand, including remedies under the statute.
Are there any other states with a similar act, a Free Enterprise Act, that you know of?
I do not know. It's called the Free Enterprise Act. It was a reenactment of our antitrust laws, which have been on the books for years. Previously, only the Attorney General could enforce it. There was no private cause of action. Previously, the law covered only tangible personal property. The 83 amendment includes services and gives the private cause of action. As far as I know, there's no case law in Texas on the private cause of action, and I do not know of any other state that has an analogous situation. Two other issues are also before the court, though the writ was not granted on the points. The fraud counterclaim. DeSantis urged a counterclaim that his original employment, that this non-competition covenant had been originally induced by fraud. And the fraud at issue arose out of a meeting between Ed DeSantis and George Wackenhut, who is the president and chairman of the Wackenhut Corporation. No one else was in that meeting. DeSantis testified. DeSantis was working in North Carolina for R.J. Reynolds at the time. DeSantis testified that Mr. Wackenhut told him that his son Rick would be taking over the company, and he wanted to surround his son by five or six top echelon experienced security people, executives. That was the perception that DeSantis, was more than a perception. Under DeSantis' testimony, that's what he says he was being hired for. He says he wasn't being hired for any other position. And his assignment to Houston was simply to learn the mechanics of the Wackenhut organization. And that Mr. Wackenhut told him he would be in Houston for no more than 1 year, then brought to the executive position. That's DeSantis' testimony. George Wackenhut's testimony in trial was, well, we discussed these things, but I didn't represent to him that he was being hired as an executive. I represented to him that he was would have the chance to advance and so on. Under the evidence for the trial court directed verdict on fraud, we were not permitted to submit an issue to the jury. Under the evidence, there was sufficient evidence on every element of fraud to warrant submission to the jury. And it is erroneous. The Court of Appeals erred in saying no, the evidence was insufficient to even warrant submission of fraud to the jury. We respectfully suggest that that should be reversed. The other cause of action was asserted in for tortious interference. The petitioner for this court counterclaimed against Wackenhut for tortious interference, alleging that Wackenhut's prosecution of this action, with the knowledge that it had, was wrongful and was tortious. Trial court granted summary judgment to Wackenhut denying that claim. The particular document, particular affidavit supporting the motion, the Wackenhut's motion for summary judgment, was not in the record at the Court of Appeals. That's my fault. Now, whether it's justified, I don't know. The affidavit was attached to a memorandum of law that was probably 3/4 of an inch thick, or 1/2 inch thick. That memorandum of law was not incorporated into the motion for summary judgment. The motion for summary judgment did incorporate another memorandum that did not have the affidavit attached. When the Court of Appeals opinion was issued, that was our first knowledge that the particular affidavit had not been included in the record. We filed a supplemental transcript with the Court of Appeals, but it did decline to change its decision on that point. There was a controverting affidavit filed, which is in the record, which controverts every conceivable allegation that Wackenhut could have made to prove its defense of privilege on the tortious interference claim. I would suggest that a presumption arising out of an omitted document should not be permitted to support that summary judgment in view of that controverting affidavit. And I refer the court to the Sackwith versus Stack decision. Secondly, I would suggest to the court that it was an abuse of discretion by the Court of Appeals not to permit the filing of the particular pleading containing the affidavit. This case was under submission at the Court of Appeals for just short of 1 year. That was clearly something that could have been rectified. The Court of Appeals could have made that point known, and I would respectfully suggest should have, in view of the complexity of this case. We ask that the court declare the covenant void, declare the injunction to have been wrongfully issued, and remand to the trial court for further proceedings.
Thank you, counsel. We will now hear argument from respondent.
May I please support Ms. Judith Fowler to present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Judith Fowler and I represent the respondent of Wackenhut Corporation. I intend to address the points of error as set out in appellant's petition and for writ of error. Any arguments that I don't address that are addressed in the brief will proceed on in some way. And if the court does decide to take the additional issues up on appeal, we would like the opportunity to submit a post-petition brief. Historically, Texas courts have expressed a concern about covenants not to compete because they are contrary to the public policy of this state and many other states that to encourage competition and free enterprise. And courts should carefully scrutinize covenants not to compete because there are unethical groups who attempt to write overly broad, restrictive covenants that prevent an individual from earning a living rather than protecting a legitimate business interest. But that's not the situation here. Mr. DeSantis retired by Wackenhut in 1981. He worked for the company for approximately 3 years until Whackham had learned that Mr. Stanis was committing unethical, was engaged in unethical solicitation of advertising to attract potential clients. Mr. DeSantis had dictated a telegram to his employee and instructed him to send that telegram to the in his maiden name to Tenneco. At the time, Tenneco was using a competitor to provide security services for them. One of the security guards employed by Tenneco murdered a prominent Houstonian, and DeSantis attempted to take advantage of that tragedy and attract them as a client. That was an unacceptable practice to Wagner. They gave Mr. DeSantis the option of resigning rather than terminating him because, as the record indicates, they were concerned about his ability to obtain future employment. After DeSantis left Wagner, he was employed by Texas Security Alarm and later had a consulting agreement with Marathon Oil. He also became half owner of Risk Determinants Inc., RDI. At that time, he began to solicit employees and clients of Whackham Hut. The record reflects that he sent out numerous letters to these clients and indicated that he had gone into business for himself. And on many of the letters, and these are all contained in the record, there were personal postscripts presenting the advantages that the client could gain by switching to Mr. DeSantis' company when the contract expires. The record indicates that these contracts are terminable on written notice in 30 days. So effectively, based on Senator's letter, a client could have decided, and Peterson did, to terminate the contract. The Court of Appeals, which upheld the permanent injunction, correctly upheld the covenant not to cease, because as a matter of law, the covenant is reasonable and valid and enforceable under Texas law. Under Texas common law, covenants not to compete will be enforced if they are reasonable. Whether the covenant is reasonable for the question of law. And the trial court looks at the covenant and the temporal, the geographical, and the activities contained in that covenant to determine whether it's reasonable. This court recently clarified the criteria that a covenant not to compete must satisfy in order to be upheld as reasonable until it was no lodgment. Now, I was waiting to hear what Mr. Mercer would say about why this covenant doesn't satisfy those four criteria, but he never did explain why it doesn't meet them. And the respondent's position is that, regardless of whether this court applies Florida law or not, with respect to Hill, this covenant is reasonable and satisfies each of the criteria. First, it has to be necessary for the protection of the employer. And in other words, it has to be a legitimate interest to protect the business goodwill or the trade secret. Now, both of those are prevalent in the case. This court is defining the trade secret among other things.
Let me ask you that. You can see that Hill versus Mobile Auto Trim says that the agreement has to be necessary to protect the interest of the employer.
Yes.
But doesn't the Court of Appeals, in its opinion, page 34, say directly opposite? After its cite to the Florida Silvers case, it says, there is no requirement that a plaintiff prove the agreement was reasonably necessary to protect its interest.
Under Florida law, the Court of Appeals found, when it applied Florida law, that all the statute required was that the individual, that a person seeking to have an injunction established that the covenant was reasonable at the time and location. That is true. That's
well, but what position are you taking? Are you saying that Hill, with its requirement, the employer showed it was necessary to protect him, ought to imply? Are you taking the position that the Florida law, which doesn't have that requirement, ought to apply?
We take the position, Justice Kilbride, that the covenant was, is reasonable under Iowa's system. We believe and do not abandon the position that Florida law was appropriately applied in this case. But if this court chooses to find that Florida law was not appropriately applied, then something has to cover the agreement. What's left, that's Texas law. That's what the petitioner urged at the trial court that we should apply. And if you apply Texas law, then, which right now has been clarified in terms of Hill, then the covenant not to speak in this case also satisfies that requirement. And we establish that in the record, even though under Florida law we weren't required to.
If it's your position that in order to, quote, protect its interest, all an employer has to show is maybe they lost one customer to somebody as a result of this?
No, Your Honor, it's not. In fact, I know the court has held that just the customers alone are not sufficient. In this case, there are, and in other cases, I think when an employer is establishing that there's a legitimate interest to protect, they should point to things such as whether there is goodwill in the business. For example, in this case, the client that Wackenhut had viewed the entity Wackenhut through DeSantis. He was essentially the front man for the company. He was hired as the area manager, and what part of his job was to go out and solicit clients and to represent to them Wackenhut and his company. So he was responsible for that goodwill on behalf of the company. Also, as in this case, the court might look to see whether there is a confidential information exchanged between the employer and the employee.
You're suggesting we could do that, but don't we have a clear jury finding that Wackenhut was not going to be irreparably harmed even if the injunction did not issue?
It is true that the jury found that Wackenhut would not be irreparably injured. However, the court, as the trial court correctly followed the procedure, they disregarded that jury finding. And the record in
I'm curious, why did the trial court disregard that jury finding?
They disregarded it for several reasons. First of all, because it's a question of law, and arguably should never have been presented to the jury in the first place. But second, the record itself reflects that irreparable injury would have occurred. And that is contained in the judgment that's in the transcript that the trial court issued. The DeSantis had already solicited clients. There is evidence in the record that he had done so. Of course, Mr. DeSantis takes the position that they didn't solicit clients, and that those letters that he sent out wouldn't ask for solicitation. He did solicit employees, and there is also evidence in the record that he did talk to employees about coming and working for him. But finally, DeSantis himself testified that absent the issuance of a permanent injunction, he had every intention of going ahead and competing with Wackenhut and using every bit of that confidential information he had obtained while he was working for them. When DeSantis worked for them, he was given information about a lot of aspects of the company. In fact, Mr. Mercer told me that he believed that he was coming down here to learn the nuts and bolts of the company. He was down here to learn how the company operated. And in that vein, he was given information and asked to do such things as price the bid that went out to clients, to work out the percentage computation on the contract. So he knew not only who the clients were, but what their contract was, how much Wackenhut was charging them, how much Wackenhut could afford to reduce that contract and still be competitive. He was familiar with the strategies that Wackenhut would use, all of the types of choices that Wackenhut would make internally. And based on that information, he was going out and he was going to compete with Wackenhut and did so very successfully.
How many private security firms are there in Houston?
I'm sorry,
how many private security firms are there in Houston?
I believe there are 4 or 5. I'm not sure that as you know, but there are additional security firms besides Wackenhut.
There's 4 or 5 majors and all the small?
I really am not sure, Your Honor, as to who would be classified as a security firm. I know that the evidence in the record reflects that on some of the clients that had bids taken, that there were 2 or 3 companies, including Wackenhut, that bid on this contract. but I couldn't tell you exactly.
It's the job of security, operating a security service, a common calling, such as a beauty operator or operating a beauty shop?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm glad you brought that up because it's not a common calling. And I think that it's very important that this court, reviewing this case, compare it to Bergman v. North Houston, the case that has been most recently decided, because a common calling, as defined recently by the Court of Appeals, is valid. And I have provided the court with a copy of that case because it's only available on Westlaw at the moment. That's the travel master's star tour. In that case, the Court of Appeals attempted to define common calling and reached the conclusion that a common calling is a location or a profession of a useful type that is entirely ordinary and undistinguished. And in this particular situation, the position that Mr. DeSantis occupied for Wackenhut was not usual and was not ordinary in any sense of the word. He was brought down here to operate the entire area office. He wasn't just a security guard who sat in a lobby for 12 hours a day. And he wasn't just there to answer the phone or maybe write letters back. He was brought down here because of the specialized training that Wackenhut provided him, and they did provide him with a specialized class in teaching him how to supervise this office. So he was brought down here to work with their clients, to go out and to develop new clients, to develop procedures, to carry out the overall company policy that the company in Florida has formulated. And it's a responsible position that it's not any way to talk policy.
I listened to your enumeration of the duties that you would be required to do, and I didn't see anything different from that of a beauty operator.
Well, I believe the court in Bergman noted that a beauty operator actually has, first of all, the skills that the individuals in Bergman receive. What training they receive somewhere else. Everybody basically learns to cut hair, to have permanent stylists, and those types of things. And then, as the court reported in the opinion, that there is no importing of specialized knowledge or information in that case. And I think that's what distinguishes Bergman most strongly from this case, is that there has been a specialized training and a giving over of confidential information and knowledge.
What did Mr. DeSantis do with R.J. Reynolds when Mr. Wackenhut hired him?
I believe that Mr. DeSantis testified at trial that he did some security type work for R.J. Reynolds and set up security on an international level. But Mr. DeSantis also testified that prior to coming to Wackenhut, he did not have any previous experience in this type of industry or in running the day-to-day operations of a security service, as in this case. And I don't think that this court has ever taken the position that tangentially related previous experience precludes specialized training in that area and serving for consideration for the covenant not to compete.
Was there a finding on the part of the court or by the jury that he used trade secrets belonging to Wackenhut after he left?
I don't believe that there was a specific issue on that. I believe that what the court held in the judgment was that there was irreparable injury and the covenant was reasonable and valid and enforceable. And in making that decision, the trial court would have to read.
Well, what was the evidence in the record that supported this irreparable injury by using trade secrets? What trade secrets were
they? Well, this court has defined trade secrets as a compilation of information which is used in one's business and which gives him an opportunity to obtain an advantage over competitors who do not know or use that information. And I believe the court, that was the definition of the Court of Appeals of Chandler, which this court is NRE, was as trade secret. And under that definition, if you look at the confidential information that he obtained For example, the information on the pricing and the structure of the contract. He actually went out and wrote a number of the contracts for the clients that he then sent letters to and said, I'm going it myself. So he had an individual knowledge of the contract and what decisions Wackett had made to reach that contract. You know, when a company gets to a point where they're contracting with someone and they're saying, we're going to agree to X, Y, and Z, they take a lot of factors into consideration. Maybe the number of people they have, the salaries that they're going to have to pay, whether they can afford to provide some special benefits or facilities. And Mr. DeSantis knew all of that information.
Well, maybe it's something that basically is we're not familiar with. But I assume this is no CIA movie like we see on TV type operation.
They're
providing security guards, probably if it's a plan at the gate and inside the buildings, and they go in and, I don't know, they turn the little key in the clock like some of them used to do. But it is actually providing that type personnel usually at the customer's place of business and making sure you have the number of people they want there to do the job they want to do. Is that pretty much what we're talking about?
I think